Welcome to The Hawkins Report, a Stranger Things podcast presented to you by LSG Media. All right, Chapter 6 is here, Jessica.
Yeah, it is.
And that means we are here.
Yeah,
welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be the new voice, the radio voice. Just kidding. This episode is called E Pluribus Unum or something. I don't really know how to say it.
But I think that's, it's Latin.
It means whale's vagina.
I don't think that's what it means.
Wow, only two more episodes to go. It seems like we just started this yesterday, and here we are. What do we have to talk about this week? Well,
the adventures of our friends.
There's lots of adventures to get to. And overall thoughts on this episode are I like it. I like it. I like this week's episode for sure. There's a couple of cool moments. A couple of unexpected good character moments. And by and large, I feel like we've bounced back on a couple of things that we may have fallen short on, or at least one thing. And that kind of was Hopper to me this week. But before we get to Hopper, here's what I want to say. If Stranger Things was one of those awesome board games where you have like all the cool pieces and like, you have like a 60-page rule book and it's super hard to play and then you have to watch videos and then your friends come over and then they're like...
Sounds like every game I've ever played with you.
Yeah, exactly. So here's my question. If you could pick I'm just going to cut to the chase. Jonathan gets picked last, right? Like if you're looking at the little character cards and you're like,
Jonathan doesn't get picked.
You're like, I could pick L, I could pick...
Jonathan does not get picked.
Lucas or Dustin or Steve or Hopper or Jonathan.
It just makes me think of the Battlestar Galactica board game and how, you know what? Like, you'd always go for the same character because you got, like, their powers. And, like, that's the one that I want.
I would always pick Baltar.
I actually played a few different people when we would play. I never had a go-to.
Yeah. Baltar, because he got the two cards, the two Cylon cards, which doubled his chances of maybe being a Cylon. So it made him inherently distrustworthy, which is one of the cool mechanics. But I guess my point is Jonathan gets picked last. And I know we come right back in on the action this week. We bounce in. Bouncing in hard on the action. And we get right back to the drywalled odd wing of the hospital where
don't we see our friends, our foursome in the Russian basement? Isn't that how it actually opens?
It does, yeah. With them running around. And Steve, you want to talk about action, Steve? I can tell. He's chomping at the bit to get
I can talk about Steve whenever we get to him.
All right.
My love.
Well, we'll go with Steve now since you can barely contain yourself.
This is you who was like, how old is Robin? Before I say what inappropriate thing I'm going to say. We had to Google to make sure she was legal before Dean said something inappropriate.
I said I think she's probably 20, which by the way is still too young. But
she's
still.
She's 21.
Still.
Whereas Joe Keery is 28, which is a reasonable age for me to love.
Ever since it was pointed out to me whose kid she was, I cannot unsee it now.
Same. Oh my God. It actually makes me a little crazy because I think she looks like if you took their two faces and put it in a simulator and were like, make a 21-year-old daughter, they would put out a picture of Maya Hawke. Like,
it's kind of what they did, except it was a penis and a vagina.
Oh my God.
And then she came out. And
I love like Ethan Hawke. Well, podcast listeners know that I love Ethan Hawke.
That's excellent information. Yeah. Super relevant.
It is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
How is it not relevant?
You love the girl's dad.
Yeah, I do. You're talking about banging her? I'm just thinking about it.
First of all, never said I talked about banging her. I just said, give me a call in like 7-8 years. Watching you from afar like a creepy uncle.
Ew.
No, but Action Jackson Steve. What's Steve's last name?
Harrington.
Action Harrington. Holy shit. It works. It's got the same flow.
Except, I literally have a Steve Harrington t-shirt. How do you not know
Steve is not Carl Weathers.
He's much more handsome.
So Action Harrington is running around fighting grown men. What do you think? Talk to me. Give me your overall thoughts.
Just overall episode thoughts. I just want to say in general, what I like about this episode is I feel like it has three different groupings, although we're starting to see where they're coming together here. More so, as I said, you know, we keep bringing people together and that type of thing. But the thing is I feel this episode had like almost, it was almost like three different genres. You had the action packed, like stuff with like Steve and Robin and the Russians and like fighting and like trying to get out and like trying to escape. And then you have the straight up like horror. Yeah. I tried to pronounce it right because I know I pronounce it weird. And I think I just pronounced it weirder by trying to pronounce it correctly.
You overthought it. It's okay.
So we have that scary element of the hospital scenes with everybody and the still not. But even still, when Elle is going into Billy's mind, it is kind of like a little bit like a horror movie.
It is.
And then we have the more lighthearted, but like detective-y stuff going on with like Joyce and Hopper and Alexi and Murray.
Yeah.
Where they're trying to gather information, but
like
they're not.
A thriller.
Right.
But a thriller for kids.
No, but it almost like it's you know.
Like a spy thriller.
It's not an action part. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. you're not in action. So it was just interesting because I feel like every different group that we saw was almost in a different type of genre throughout the episode, and that was fun to watch.
Interesting. I never even thought about that way, but I like it.
That's what I thought about it today.
And you are right about we can sort of see, I mean, we could always intuit where it was going based on what we saw, but now we're really seeing where it's going.
And they're all realizing, kind of.
Yep, we have connected Klein to the Russians directly. We actually see him interacting with them at the park.
Mm-hmm. On the Gravitron. Do you like the Gravitron?
No, I can't do spinning rides.
Oh, but see, I can do the Gravitron because it doesn't feel like your spinnings are going so fast.
That doesn't make any sense.
No,
what you just
said.
You
do.
In other words, you spin so fast you don't know you're spinning?
Listeners, back me up on this one. Mm-hmm. When you go on the Gravitron, it does not feel like you're spinning. It's so fast that all it feels like is like weight and you're pushed up against the wall. Mm-hmm. Like you can't move.
Yeah, I know. I've never been on one.
You just said you hated them.
Right.
It doesn't feel like you're spinning.
Which presumes I've been on one.
I hate a lot of things that I haven't done, like eating mushrooms.
Okay.
Not the drug, the actual food.
Either. I've been on the Turkish Twist, the Gravitron, spinning rides, and me do not mix. I prefer free fall rides and roller coasters.
Oh, I would never go on a free fall. See, I've never been on a free fall ride, and I know that I hate them.
Nah, it's awesome.
I don't think so.
Interesting.
Nope, done. I'm scared of amusement parks too because I sometimes go on Google rabbit holes and I Google amusement park deaths for like 7 hours.
What's crazy is there's not a listener right now not thinking you're afraid of something. They're all going, wow, Jessica seems so fearless based on her saying about all the things she's afraid of.
I didn't say I was fearless. I just said that I don't like amusement
precisely.
Parks.
Precisely. I just said that. That's my point. You're not listening.
Okay.
If you listen, you'll know that I was saying that they don't think that at all. All you talk about is, oh, I can't go on an elevator. Oh, I can't go over a bridge. Oh, I can't go on amusement park rides.
I can. Do you want people to die in amusement parks?
The COVID thing must be perfect for you because you can't do anything.
I have to go to work every day.
Yeah, but you don't have to face the fears of going into, say, you know, a shopping center. You don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, I don't go to the grocery store. That's Dean's job. Mm-hmm. I order everything I need on Amazon. Run out of deodorant, order it on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, here we are. Working out our marital issues while simultaneously covering Stranger Things. Oh, fuck. So no, I can't do spinning rides. They make me literally nauseous. And, but I can do free falls and roller coasters. So I do like this scene. Where were we before we got off on this tangent?
You were just talking about how he was hanging out with the Russians.
Right. And it's starting to become clear that they have... That Klein is inadvertently, well, very advertently, a Russian asset. And meaning that they knew that they might run into some in law enforcement problems or some kind of problems with the town if they were doing crazy, wacky, supernatural experiments underneath the surface of the mall. So it's smart to go after the, well, I guess you would say politically, the most powerful man in the town. And it starts to make a lot more sense as to why he would be wrapped up with the Russians because they need him to keep a lid on things while they conduct their experiments. And apparently he gets paid for it, right? I'm guessing Klein gets money.
I would assume.
I haven't really seen what he gets, but the bags they were delivering to his office, I'm assuming were money. And we've seen that relationship more or less confirmed. I know, obviously, Hopper knew, but we've seen it confirmed and it doesn't look too pleasant. And, now it's turned into Russian Terminator wants Hopper.
Yeah.
He wants Hopper because Hopper knows too much, and he's now eliciting Klein's help and tracking Hopper down, which probably seems like something Klein would be willing to do based on the way Hopper has beat the shit out of him and embarrassed him in front of his entire staff.
That's very true.
So a motivated Klein is on the hunt for Hopper, and he has Russian muscle for support.
Yeah.
I like it. And we do see, as he said, we're going to give him a big old Independence Day parade. They're going to forget everything.
And they did.
They are. They're in the process of it.
Looks cute. I would not go on any of those rides.
I have a feeling there's going to be a giant monster stalking through that place like a fucking crazy monster movie. Like,
which, I'm sorry, is such a great visual. I love the idea of a haunted theme park, like monster at the theme park. Like that is like very a cool image to me.
It is. It is, unless honestly, he's so huge that he's stomping around just kicking over rides. Like I much prefer like the creepy carnivals in town and you're not sure about the people running it. Like that's the kind of story I like. But I do like this too, and I'm curious as to where it's going to go. But overall this week, I do like the idea that you're talking about genre bending and things of that nature. Some more character building for Robin, which I liked. We'll get to that too. But how do you want to go through each of these so we're not
Where do you want to start? Let's start with one group and do that group, and then do the next group, and then do the next group. We already did one group, Klein. He's done.
Klein's done. So Hopper.
Bye, Klein. All right, we'll talk about Hopper.
Talk to me about Hopper.
I love Alexei.
Me too. Me too, actually. I think he's great.
I think that Alexei's a great character. He's really funny. I like the language barrier. I like that he is not afraid of Hopper now that he's in this situation and he knows Hopper needs him.
Sure.
But I also love the fact that Hopper is willing to call Alexei's bluff because Hopper is smart enough to realize that Alexei is actually scared, that Alexei could have gotten away before and didn't.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think that that is some old school good shit from Hopper. That's the Hopper I like to see.
Yes.
Even when he's like, you know, roughing Alexei up, he literally says out loud, I am not going to hurt him.
Right.
Like he's basically just wants to scare him.
Yeah, yeah, because they're all concerned because he flipped his fucking lid.
And it's simple, and Hopper's basically like, I'm just doing this for show. And he sure can say that in English because, you know, Alexei can't understand him.
So they think, right? There's always that possibility with that Russian, you know, sort of sneaky spy doctor, research scientist guy. He might understand the whole time, but as of now, it doesn't appear he does. But I do like this stuff. And to sort of further drill down on the point you made, what I really enjoy about the Hopper thing is Hopper not sort of being like a incompetent oaf. This is Hopper's bread and butter, like you said. And even more so is that one of the cool things I notice about this is that Hopper knew the truth about Alexei before Alexei did.
Mm-hmm.
So Alexei, when we get to that point where he's roughing him up and he's like, oh, I want the strawberry Slurpee, buys him Burger King, he's breaking his balls, getting free meals, watching Woody Woodpecker, doing his thing, getting the translations from Murray. And he does run for it, but he does stop.
Smiling too when he gets in the car and thinking, he's driving away. He's right. Like, okay. And then he realizes.
That's what I like about it. That's why I like this so much, because Hopper knows before he knows. Because Hopper has read it on his face. He can tell, you're in law enforcement long enough, you know when people are scared, you know when people are lying, and you know when people are lying to themselves, which is really impressive. And that's a great moment for Hopper. And they get in, he bombs off in the Todd Father car. And then he just slams it down. They go out. He's still out there. Gives them back. Neutron Dance is playing. Fucking Beverly Hills Cop. And I like that Hopper gets his moment of being cool again. Right? Sort of a confident, I've done it. And it's not going to just be me being comic relief. His comic relief leads to something cohesive and fundamental in the investigation.
Yeah, and it's good because they're fighting Hopper. Like Joyce especially is like, Hopper, do not let him go. He has started the car. And Hopper is still like, no.
Mm-hmm.
Like he stood by what he felt was the truth and was obviously correct, which is pretty impressive, I think.
Absolutely.
That's some good work from Hopper.
I agree.
Which I like.
And Alexei starts giving up the goods. He starts describing. So if I had one knock on this episode, them taking so long to kind of understand what the hell's going on here. Like, it's a Gate and Hawkins, guys. He's not talking about, like, drilling to the planet core. He's probably talking about the upside down, which you guys
already know about.
Are intimately familiar with. Why is this so hard for you guys to figure out?
Seriously.
Right? That was the only, like, kind of trite moment.
It was too much.
And one moment I didn't love, I actually didn't love Joyce's meltdown this time.
When she calls the number back? Yeah, I wasn't a fan either.
I didn't like it, and I don't know why. It felt like there was a lot of trying going on.
I didn't like it either. It was, if she wants to hurry up and go home and be with the kids, that's a thing to do. But her, and then her calling back the number, like, I didn't need it. Like, it was supposed to be cute, but it wasn't cute for me.
Let's have a listen.
What are you doing? Joyce, what are you doing?
Philadelphia Public Library.
Yes, hello. This is Antique Chariot's partner, Wheelbarrow.
I don't think Antique Chariot
properly conveyed the urgency of our situation.
What are you doing?
Can't just sit around and wait for a call.
Ma'am, I'm going to need you to stay calm.
No.
Don't you dare patronize me.
I don't know we get who it. You are.
It's a little, I don't know. It felt fabricated to me. It didn't
feel like real.
It felt fake to me.
I agree.
You know, like it felt like acting.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? And obviously a lot of it has to do with the audacity that she would call this guy and bully him into making a move. And he's supposed to be some sort of CIA asset. Now, I will admit I'm a little hazy on this part of the episode. Maybe okay. You can help.
They're trying to call Dr. Owens from last season.
Okay, which was, what's his name there?
The guy from Mad About You. I don't know his
yep,
name.
Yep, yep, yep.
Paul Reiser?
Yep, Paul Reiser.
Yeah, they're trying to call him because he, like, you know, knows shit. And he said he would help if Hopper needed help. So that's the secret line to get to him.
Right.
It's called the fake Philadelphia Public Library.
Right. And did we know that going in?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I don't remember anything like that from last season, but I mean, it's been a while.
Sure. Awesome. Okay, cool. So at least we do have some consistency in that part of it. I just, again, it's been a long time since I've seen those prior seasons. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that's the last we see of Hopper, right? And her sense of urgency is, can you just kind of break that down for me?
Her sense of urgency? Joyce?
Yes.
She's worried about the kids and she wants to get back to them. She just wants to sit at the house and wait for Owens to call back.
Got it.
Which is fair, but sure. I just, it was not well written. That's all.
Right. Maybe I'm guessing it's going to inspire them
to move faster because a woman yelled at them.
No. Them and themselves, like Hopper and Alexi and Joyce, I'm guessing are going to get in that car next and take off.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Which means they'll be heading home, which means we'll probably get a connection next week for episode 7, which is the, you know, episode before the finale.
Pentultimate.
Oh.
I love that word.
Aren't you fancy?
The pentultimate episode.
So, yeah, again, it was a very strong Hopper episode. It was good to see Hopper not just reduced to oafish comedy. It was good to see him doing good police work. It was awesome. And now that they have Alexi in their employ, so to speak, he's sort of given up the goods because he fears going back and being compromised and who knows what's in store for him. Maybe a gulag visit.
But, gulag?
The gulag. Take him to the gulag.
What is a gulag?
Russian prison.
Oh.
Anyway. So that's it. He is, he's back, so to speak. And that's awesome.
I have one more question about this scene.
Go.
What is your opinion on Slurpees? Is there a difference between strawberry and cherry? Because I have a strong opinion on
there
it.
There definitely is.
Huge difference. Yeah. I hate strawberry flavored shit. I would be just like Alexi and I would not want to give my shit up. When I asked for cherry, because cherry is way fucking better. So I'm Team Alexi on that.
Cherry's definitely better.
Way better. Yeah. Artificially flavored strawberry is disgusting, unless it's like a milkshake.
I don't mind it, but cherry definitely dominates in the slushy department. And I don't like the blue ones either. They taste like nothing.
Blue raspberry.
Me. They don't taste like anything.
Well, I mean, my favorite is always a lemonade of any sort.
Yeah.
I like lemonade.
If you had to pick between like Slurpee, slushy, like Orange Julius, like where would you? Who gets your $5?
Probably like a slushy, right? Yeah. Like a Slurpee is like a smoothie.
I like a pina colada Orange Julius.
I like a pina colada with rum.
Duh. Another shocking moment. A big reveal for the listener.
That sounds delicious. Now I would like one. But I can't have one because we're quarantined. The end.
Did you want to answer the question?
What question?
I say something that makes her think of booze. Her eyes glaze over and she loses herself.
Oh, I just told you a slushie.
It's like showing a book of veins to
actually,
a vampire.
No, actually, Slurpee's really good too.
A book of veins? Is that even a book?
Yeah, I just like any of them that, like, it's good when it comes out of, I don't like, I don't know. I don't like when it's like the crushed ice. I like when it's like smoother. You know what I
mean?
Yeah,
totally. Totally. Yeah, like it goes through a machine.
Yeah.
I gotcha. I think that's about it for Hopper and Co. Yeah.
Yeah. They're
all right.
Just hanging out. They're just figuring shit out. They figure out what's going on. They're at the bottom of this now about generators and the gate and the upside down and all that stuff.
Totally.
Totally.
Where to next?
I don't know. You decide.
Nope. I picked the first one. Now it's your turn.
I guess we can talk about the ice cream crew and then we'll talk about 11 and stuff last. Cause that's kind of the most important stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a good move.
Yeah, that's probably the most to talk about there.
What do you think overall of this, of the whole ice cream crew installation infiltration stuff?
I love it.
Yeah, me too.
I love the hard cut of like when Alexi's like, no one is ever going to be able to get in to this. It is like top secret is impossible to get into. And you cut to like Dustin and Erica like in the fucking like basement. It was
two children
it was
inside
fantastic.
Of it.
Fantastic. Yeah. I like the stuff. I like the you know, exciting, you know, thriller stuff of them getting caught, trying to get away, being tortured for information, you know, Dustin and Erica come back and save the day. Like, it's fun and it's exciting. In there, like, as I always say, I like to watch these people because the four of them are really good together. And I like, the only thing I don't like is watching people get beat up. It really bothers me. So, And poor Steve gets beat up like pretty much on the regular in this show. So yeah. I worry for him.
Yeah, it definitely has a children's flair about it because of Steve sort of just, this goes back to the old action trope of the 80s, which seems perfect as this is 1985. The action trope of incompetent, you know, enemy guards. Mm-hmm. Where reality is, if each one of these guys would probably be a killer and destroy Steve, but it does have that kind of like, oh, push barrels on them, run around, be quick, be cagey, and it's cool. Like I'm saying that as a compliment because it reminds me of like those old school movies from back in the day where you're just plowing through incompetent guard after competent guard because it's not, this isn't supposed to be gritty realism here. You know, this is supposed to be Stranger Things, and Stranger Things. I think what Stranger Things does that's so strong, that's such a strong thing that it has, is that it is distinctly aware of its identity. Now, we talked at the beginning of the season a little bit about how that hurts it a little bit when they lean into it too much and they try to write to it instead of just writing. But it has such a strong sense of self. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it seems so well done and just so effortless to me. And again, it's just, they really nail the aesthetic. They really nail the theme.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And yeah, I like the lighting of the installation. It's fucking cool, man. Like all the, you know, when as they're running around inside of it. But yeah, like you said, poor Steve gets caught after Dustin learns that Erica's a nerd because of her math acumen.
And because of My Little Pony.
My Little Pony, that's right. Ah, shit, that's funny. It's funny. Erica has that kid thing where she's pretending to be older than she is.
Yeah.
Like kids do, or at least behaving older than she actually is with sort of like the tough attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he brings up My Little Pony, it's just a nice way to gently remind her that she's still a kid and remind all of us that they're still kids.
Yeah, doing all this stuff, but they're actually kids for sure. Right.
And you get that a couple of times in this episode. You know, you get that with the My Little Pony. You get that when Steve's being interrogated. He's like, I literally work for a fucking ice cream company.
Yeah.
Like, I work for Two Scoops, whatever the hell it's called.
It's called Scoops Ahoy.
Scoops Ahoy.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Two Scoops.
Two Scoops, Scoops Ahoy. They both sound like good knockoff cereal mottos.
Scoops Ahoy.
Two Scoops of Raisins, right?
I don't know what that means.
Chips Ahoy. Isn't that?
Chips Ahoy is a cookie.
Oh, it's a cookie.
But Scoops Ahoy is because they like wear sailor uniforms. It's like,
right, I get
Ahoy,
it.
Ahoy, you know?
Yeah.
You say?
Oh, totally.
Got it?
Yeah. I like how keyed in you are and tuned in on everything about Steve's
Thank
life.
You.
Like the motto, what it means. You probably know what Daisy works, right?
Yeah.
You're probably familiar with his ice cream scooping technique.
For sure.
Yeah. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Keep talking into the glass so you can be Bane.
What the fuck?
It would be extremely painful.
Like that?
That was really weird that you just did that.
Was it weird?
It was.
Weird as a weird thing that just happened.
It was.
Yeah.
It was unexpected.
I did a weird voice.
I don't know where that tiny cup came from. Like, what is that?
You were merely adopted the dog. I was born to it. Molded by it.
It's frightening that you have that memorized.
I think I fucked it up, to be honest with you.
Oh, well, that's but anyways, embarrassing for you.
What's embarrassing is your boyfriend's outfit and the fact that he's getting the shit beaten out of him. My future girlfriend.
Getting punched in the face.
I was like, how can I say this without being disgusting? shit. But anyway, they get beat up. They get caught. They get tied to a chair. He's really beat up. Obviously, she's concerned. She doesn't know what's going on.
And she's new to this world of all this insanity. This has happened to Steve for 2 seasons in a row. Wait a minute.
Are you certain that a 21-year-old ice cream scooping mall rat is not familiar with being captured by Russian agents in an underground secret installation that's boring its way into the upside down?
I mean, I think
watching her friend get tortured and there are actual monsters called mind flayers existing. You're telling me she's new to all this?
I mean, I think she might be. I mean, she might not be.
Okay. Just making sure. The moment after she spits in the guy's face and he says that was a mistake,
mm-hmm.
she almost looks like she's going to cry and I love it.
Yeah.
It's really good acting.
Because she's scared.
I wish they would have stayed on in another second to remind us again. It's important to be reminded that even though this is, you know, a kid's program, it kind of is for adults too, but you know what I'm saying? That they should be scared. It shouldn't just be oafish nonsense if we're not going to just watch this as total candy, right? Stranger Things, the hook for us, the hook for you that you told me was like, it's about a missing kid.
Yeah.
The Vanishing of Will Byers is the first episode title, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, damn, that sounds heavy.
Yeah.
And then you realize it's not so heavy, but it does have a lot of adult moments. And it's important to have us reminded when we see stuff like this. And we get a couple of subtle moments here with it's the acting by Maya Hawke, is it?
Yep.
And then it's the more overt moments, which we'll talk about at the end of the episode as we get to the Billy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I think it's really cool. But talk to me some more about the interrogation. Talk to me more about the truth serum, Steve, all this shit.
Yeah, I like that they're both scared, but they're still trying to figure out their way out of it, which I appreciate, like trying to move the chairs.
Sure.
Which does not work in the end.
That's also like a kind of a fuck you to every movie where they do this successfully. It's
yeah. yeah. And they get really excited. Like, okay, we got it. And then it all goes downhill. Yeah. Obviously, you know, Robin and Steve have like a really nice conversation. She's thinking about dying and she talks about being a loser essentially in school and how she felt and how, you know, even the people who pretend they don't care about being cool do care about being cool.
Of course. And she corrects it or further expounds on it by saying accepted. And I think that's the biggest part of it, you know. My friend's, one of our mutual friends' mom used to have this bumper sticker that said, all of you nonconformists are all alike. Hilarious. And it always made me think of that, this idea of, no, we're the different kids. Like we're the drama kids or we're the goth kids or we're the this kids. But at the end of the day, they all want acceptance within their own subgroup. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like how we are in the online space now. We all want acceptance within whatever group we've found on the online community. It's almost like we all have these insulation chambers now with people who think like us and we gravitate towards them to be accepted. And it's just so easy. And you know, without me going off on a long tangent, that's why people struggle so hard. That's why so many people have, that's why there's a lot of division amongst people because new ideas into it are like, ooh, I don't know. Ooh, I don't know. But it is, you know, kids especially, man, like, you know, high school, being an outsider, being quote, a loser, part of the losers club, being one of those trench coat kids, and I'm not talking about the ones that shoot schools up, but being one of those kids, you're just kind of looking for your own acceptance in your own identity, in your own way. But at the end of the day, nobody wants total isolation, you know? And it's cool. I like her reconciling those thoughts. I like her reconciling what sounds like, would you call it some kind of crush? I mean,
this would be the point where I would say, I ship Robin and Steve, right? I mean, hasn't it been that way all season?
I'll fucking smash his face in if he touches her. You think his face looks bad now?
I mean, aren't they clearly meant to fall in love? Like, isn't that what this conversation feels like? Like her admitting that she felt this way about him at that time. Mm-hmm. But now she's in this situation where she has gotten to know him on a different level. And it's like, it's almost like their relationship is different now. Like she doesn't idolize him. She's not looking at him like, oh my God, Steve Harrington. She's like, he's the schmuck that she works with.
Right. Exactly.
And he's like, I like being that person. And I love that. I love that idea.
Shedding that like, image, right?
You were so popular. I wanted that. And you know, I watched you in all of this. And she's like, you know, and now who would have thought that I'd be working with you and whatever. And she calls him like a schmuck. And he's like, you know, I liked being your schmuck.
Yeah.
And like, that is also such a nice, genuine moment of him being like, those things I wore in the past are not me. And I like the person that I am now. And it's probably nice for him to have somebody tell him, like, I've seen this difference in you as a person.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, I don't want to belittle Robin's character by calling it a crush. I think it's more of a desire to understand the world that Steve existed in.
Right.
Right. That's a better way to say it. And I like what you're saying there, which is she is a reflection that he's seeing himself in, so to speak. It's almost like she's holding up the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having the realization, and he has been since even meeting these kids and hanging out with them.
Yeah.
Even before Robin. But
since him and Nancy broke up, pretty much.
For sure. Yeah. Great point.
You know, since Nancy broke up with him, he's kind of gone through this, like, he's gone through like a very big like character arc. I just think for like an outsider to come into the situation and to be like, this is what I thought of you, and like, look where we are now. And for him to be like, yes, like, and this is, I like where I am now. So I'm sure there were points where, you know, he missed how it used to be. And Robin's smart in the way she explains it. And I like that she tells him the story. And I like that she tells him the story probably because she thinks they're going to die in this, you know, Russian basement. And it's a really, really good moment. It's very like real in the way they communicate with each other. I feel like I really like it.
Totally. And I like that not only is it something about Steve, but we learn a lot about Robin in this moment. And
100%.
I think it serves that purpose very well because he kind of reminds her that it's not what you think. And it's almost like I feel like Robin probably knew that in the back of her head somewhere. And you know what I mean? You know how sometimes you do that when you're younger? You're like, I know, but I still am curious.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear it from him, I think. And it's good for her. It also humanized her more. She's always been like a good character, but it gives her more depth as well.
Correct. Because the stuff we've known about her thus far has been more surface level.
Correct.
We know she's obviously incredibly smart. We know she's a band geek. Like she's admitted to all of those things.
Yep.
You know, we know her personality. This gives us more of an insight into who she was. You know, this is where she would have been in season one. She would have been sitting behind Steve in class every day. Non-existent to everybody. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's something that stuck with her.
Yep. I like it. Good stuff this week out of them. But don't worry, because as things start to look grim, we have a bit of a distraction caused where we see that Dustin and Erica managed to get themselves a really vicious cattle prod, one that I think they thought they were going to use on a monster that they built a cage for.
Yes, they did see the big cage.
And they've taken that green goop a la Aliens, like their blood, and just melted through like 7 decks and caused a huge alarm to go off, giving them time to rush in and cattle prod that Dr. Mangala-looking guy down onto the ground.
Great casting. So stereotypical, but perfect.
Yeah, he's creepy.
That's an example of perfect like casting that is like stereotypical and over the top, and it works,
mm-hmm.
is that doctor. He's exactly what he should look like.
For sure.
100%.
Yep. And it's awesome. You know, I like that moment where they bust in and the drugs are funny.
Yeah, I love the
I
random.
Was just talking about you. That's so weird.
I love when he says that. And I know this is like so tropey, but like I fucking love the, like, somebody accidentally gets high or, like, does drugs or whatever, and they're, like, acting in, like, this, like, totally different manner. And, like, I get it. Like, you know, it's probably not, like, the greatest or smartest thing, but it's so fucking funny, and it just makes me laugh. Like, just them talking, giggling, they're like, your drugs don't work. Your drugs don't work.
Right.
Like, they're really funny in these moments. Steve is so funny. Oh, it's so crazy. I was just talking. That part made me laugh out loud. Like, yeah. There was just a very funny, I find that trope entertaining.
Definitely. You know what I love about this? I'm thinking about it right now. How cool is it that in Kill Bill 2, that fucking Uma got hit with true serum too? Isn't that funny? I was just thinking about that. I was like, I wonder if Maya watched Mom's old movie.
Probably.
Where Bill shoots her. He's like, gotcha. And she's like, you, what the fuck is this?
Maybe.
And then she's like, telling the truth. It's cool.
Maybe.
About that, huh?
Yeah, that is entertaining. I do like, I love Erica when she sees a cage and she gets the cattle prod and like Dustin's like, what is that? And she's like, a dangerous weapon. Like, what's wrong with you? I do still think Erica's funny. She always entertains me.
She definitely is entertaining.
She's a funny kid for sure. I actually think I like her more my second time around watching, to be honest.
Nice.
I feel like the first time around, I might have like been like, I don't know, like, is it trying too hard? And yeah. Watching a second time, I don't really feel that way. I actually think she's funny. And like,
and for the record,
comedic relief.
When I say try hard, I'm not demeaning a child actor. I'm talking about the way she would be written.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Watching this time around, I don't feel that way. Like, I find her to be funny, and I really like her interactions with Dustin a lot.
Right.
And with the whole group. I think for the most part, she's been entertaining.
Awesome.
Personally, is what I have to say about that.
And I guess that's the last we see of them, is the fact that we know that they've escaped, because we don't come back to them.
We do not come back to them.
Which leads us to our final grouping. We have to talk about Elle and the gang.
A lot of stuff happening here.
Tons and tons of stuff. I guess we've kind of talked about the hospital stuff already, other than Jonathan doesn't do anything except, you know, splinter a glass a little.
No, I mean, there's like a lot going on in the hospital. The monster being there, Elle, like the horror movie like moment of Nancy being chased by this thing and being stuck in the room, and like she does a great job, and Nancy Dwyer, yeah, right? That's her name. She does a great job of being fucking terrified.
She's
which
great.
I love. Mm-hmm. I like that. Of course Elle saves the day, not Jonathan. But then Jonathan's like, Nancy, I love you so much. I tried to help. Jonathan's okay in this episode. I'm not mad at him.
Yeah,
he's fine. He's done nothing wrong.
I'm just teasing when I say I would. Well, I'm not teasing when I say I'd pick him last in the board game. I definitely would, but he was better in this episode.
Yeah. The hospital scene is scary. Like, it is so much like a horror movie. The way it's shot, the lighting, everything about it, it's great.
For sure.
I'm a fan.
I am also a fan. I love the way the monster, I like the monster's properties. Let's say.
It's like Eugene Toombs.
I like the way, much more so, but I like the way if you start looking closely at this thing, you start seeing the human remains that make up the goop, this viscous matter, as it were.
No, it's so, ooh. I hate when the subtitles say squelching, too. That really bothers me.
But yes, we do see that the creature retreats down into the grates, and we see it regenerating somewhat.
Yeah, like it's sending out pieces of itself as opposed to just the whole guy just going out right there. You know what I mean?
And this leads to one of the big things that they wanted to focus on this episode, and something that I think has been kind of going on in the throughout, which is this idea of Mike and Elle's relationship and Max's interpretation of that relationship and exactly what it means for their characters. Talk to me about this.
It is interesting, and this episode did a great job of it, of, you know, Max being constantly the one to say, like, she can do it if she says she can do it. Like, it's up to her.
Sure.
And Mike just constantly worrying for her.
Right.
And that, like, argumentative nature between them. And Elle wanting to do these things, but maybe being willing to, like, push her limits a little too much. Because then she gets herself into, like, that kind of dicey situation at the end where she's pretty scared.
Right.
I liked Mike in this episode a lot. I think this was a really good episode for Mike, because he was behaving in that way that's kind of annoying, but you could see...
Realistic though, right?
But you could see why he was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that he felt like no one else was caring. And like he said, that they were just like basically using her for, you know, her superpowers, essentially, when he cares about her for her. And I don't think that's what Max is doing. I think Max cares about Elle and just wants Elle to do what Elle feels like she could do without anybody telling her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, neither one's wrong.
Right.
Neither of them is doing it because they don't care about her.
Let's have a listen.
Did the mind flayer just suddenly stop infecting people? And even if the flayed are monsters now, why can't Elle find them?
Okay, can you guys settle an argument for us? Who do you think should decide Elle's limits? Mike or Eleven?
The way that you frame that is such bullshit.
It's not bullshit, Mike. This is your whole problem. And it's also precisely the reason why she dumped your ass.
Elle dumped you?
Yeah, because she is conspiring against me. She's corrupting her.
Enlightening her. The fact is, she's not yours. She's her own person, fully capable of making her own decisions.
She's risking her life for no reason.
For no reason, Mike. The fleet are out there doing God knows what.
Killing, flaying, transforming into monsters.
And Elle's not stupid. She knows her abilities better than any of us.
Exactly. Thank you.
And she is her own person.
Exactly.
With her own free will.
I'm going to pause right here, but I'll let it play because I want to hear Mike's retort. But man, he's getting fucking, he's catching it from all sides. And what they're
even
saying.
Even the men. What even the men think this woman deserves to have a mind of her own.
it's absurd, to Who be knew? Frank. It's an absurd proposition, to be frank. Next thing you know, they'll want to vote. Fucking outrageous. But I do, because none of them are wrong about what they're saying regarding her.
Exactly.
But to Mike's point, they're framing it in a way that he's not totally down with. And he's going to talk about that in just a second. But I do like this. I do like that Mike has conviction because he's catching it from all sides and he doesn't just like give in.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a lesson for Mike to learn, just like there's a lesson for everybody else to learn here. And that's what I like about this moment.
Right.
Exactly. Elle has saved the world twice, and Mike still doesn't trust her.
You want to talk about trust, really? After you made Eleven spy on us?
Wait, what?
Oh, she didn't tell you this?
No.
Your girlfriend used Elle's powers to spy on us.
No, I did not make her. It was her idea. And why are we even talking about this? Seriously.
Yeah, who cares?
I care.
Yeah, I guess girlfriends don't lie. They spy.
We were just joking around.
Would it have been so funny if I was taking a massive shit or something?
You weren't.
Oh, God.
What if I was?
Then gross. Seriously,
then gross.
Mike?
I'm just trying to demonstrate how careless Max is with Eleven's powers. In fact, how careless all of you are. You're treating her like some kind of machine when she's not a machine, and I don't want her to die looking for the flayed when they've obviously vanished off the face of the earth. So can we please just come up with a new plan, because I love her and I can't lose her again.
Whoa. So, because he's a child, Mike reveals the heart of his argument, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very emotional.
Yeah.
He loves her and he wants to keep her safe and he doesn't know how. And when you love somebody and you want to keep them safe and you don't know how, there's a part of you that feels a sense of control being lost there. And that's anxiety inducing. So I get where he's coming from, but they're not wrong either. She is her own person. You should trust her. She can make her own decisions.
That's the thing. They're all right.
Absolutely.
None of them are wrong. And their reasoning for feeling the way they feel are all valid.
Right.
And I like that. I like that. We have everybody against Mike, but Mike is like, but this is what I mean. And then you're like, okay, I can see it from where you're coming from. Like, you can see it from all of their angles. Like, none of them are wrong. None of them are being careless with Eleven. Like, they care about her.
Right.
I mean, obviously, like, Max and Mike more so than some of the others. Those are the two that are obviously closest to her. And that's why those are the two people who are really having the argument. I think Nancy might be using Eleven as a weapon more than anybody because she don't give a shit.
Put that blindfold on, you dingus. Point me in the enemy. Yeah, it's good stuff. But this does lead to a decision that Elle has, which is to sort of dive in, right?
Yeah, she wants to find, you know, this hub, like where everything is. And the way to do that is to go back and look, find it in Billy's memories, as opposed to just going and be like, hey, Billy, what's up? What are you doing right now? Cool. Sitting in your bed, just sitting there like a fucking weirdo on the 4th of July. Just sitting.
I know. I love how Max is like, that's absurd.
I know. They're like, oh, no, that is not normal.
He should be looking for the comforts of his mommy that ran away from him in between the legs of some poor hapless wench.
Whoa.
Behind the Ferris wheel at the 4th of July parade, or whatever the fuck that is. Yeah, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, so we get to a very like cool and well done, I mean, visually scene of Eleven going through Billy's memories, which I love a lot of things about, and I hate some things about, to
Talk to me.
I don't want this show to do what it's doing, which is trying to humanize a bad character, like a character who has proven to not be a good person. Mm-hmm. And the show wants you to, now the show is trying to say like, but look at Billy's sad life. He's not really that bad. Love him now because he's been taken over by a monster.
I think that's your interpretation of it. I think at the end of the day, would you agree that there are some people who you would say are morally bad people that are probably that way as a result of the way they were brought up?
Of course.
Right. Now, I think again, this is going to come down to like the way you're interpreting the use of 11 and the way I'm interpreting the use of 11. But I think it's also, I think the show is still wants you to make your own decision. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's just, I feel like we already did this with Steve and his character where we're like, wow, Steve's a dick. And then yeah, they're like, but look at this character arc. And we're like, Billy's a bad person.
Billy's bad.
Yeah, they're doing it like times 10. They're like, Billy's like a bad person. Mm-hmm. But like, let's humanize him and make you care about him now that he's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Like now that he's actually a legitimate bad guy.
Right, because
we didn't care about Billy before.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, sure. And that's one of the things I talked about. I said at the beginning of this season, I said, well, if Billy's going to be the bad guy for this, then doesn't it sort of take away a little bit of the punch of having one of your own corrupted if he's just sort of like a two-dimensional character?
And that's the problem. And they're trying to make him a three-dimensional character. But this, for me, is too little, too late. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I think it's beautiful. I love watching it. I think it's super well done. I hate the idea of them doing that. And from the first time I watched this, from the start of the season, I'm like, they're going to try to make Billy into this character where we care about him and we feel like, because we don't. We don't before this. We don't care about Billy. He's a dick. Like, that's all we've ever seen. We saw Daddy be mean to him a little bit once.
Right.
Like, and we get it. Okay, Daddy. You know, it's too little too late for me. We're in episode 6. You're going to be like, here's this whole backstory about Billy so that you see that he's a human being.
Do you think it would have been better served if ever since the introduction of Billy that you got little drips of his background peppered throughout?
Yes.
Okay.
And we didn't. So what you're saying is one moment.
Okay. So what you're saying is, just to clarify, because I'm trying to get to the bottom of your thinking, you're saying I don't disagree that Billy is a human being who's deeply flawed. I disagree that they're trying to teach us about that in one shot.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. I agree with this.
We've only been shown Billy as a two-dimensional character.
Right.
We've been shown him to be homophobic, racist, like just not a kind person. Mm-hmm. And yes, we saw one scene where his dad was like rough with him. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, that one scene is not enough to make this turn Billy into a three-dimensional character that we're all going to care about.
Right.
Because I don't. I don't care that his mom left him. I don't care that his dad was mean to him. I mean, I do care, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just too little, too late. We spent too much time not developing Billy as a character to all of a sudden be like, vomit this character development in our laps in a very beautiful way.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So that's how I feel about that.
It's really cool visually. This is visually awesome because we know that she's trying to walk through his brain and it's funny. It's almost like a linear approach to walking through his mind because she's like, okay, here's where I am. Here's where I need to go.
Yes. Moving forward in time.
Correct.
I love it.
Yep. It's really cool. And the swirling chaos that is his mind at the end, the source, so to speak. I like that the swirling chaos around it. I just like the visual motif of the chaos in his mind surrounding the location.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. Because at the end of the day, she's trying to get information in his mind. So she's in his mind to get the information for a location. But now you are subject to the visual sort of motifs in his mind. And that's really slick. Obviously. Here's how I feel about it. I feel like if you didn't do it, I like how Elle reacts to the dad too. Like she kind of like glares mm-hmm. at him as she runs by as the kid runs away.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably pretty clear that Billy's not making out of the season. And I think the reason we know that is twofold. Number one, he's been possessed and they don't seem to make out too well as they all melt at the end of this episode. And number two, you know, these scenes of trying to humanize him and shit like that. Obviously, I think this is telling us, this is a strong indication that he's not going to make it out of the season. And I think, you know, I think Stranger Things is probably less interested in getting into a lot of the gray areas of morality. It seems to be pretty much a bad guys are bad guys, good guys are good guys show.
You don't think so? No, because we literally watched Steve go from being a bad guy to a good guy.
But he wasn't a villain. He was like just sort of an antagonistic character.
He was kind of, I mean, if we go back and listen to season one podcast, I think he was a villain to me, at least.
Maybe. I don't remember. You might be right. Maybe I'm just misremembering. I haven't watched it in a long time.
No, he was not as inherently bad as Billy, but he was definitely a character where you're like, this is a bad guy. We don't like him.
But they didn't build an arc around him being the bad guy. He was just an antagonistic character.
Yeah, but Billy's arc of being a bad guy is just because he's possessed. Before he was possessed, he wasn't the bad. His arc wasn't. He wasn't the bad guy. He was just an antagonistic character.
Right, but if you drill it down, Steve has never been the focus of being the bad guy for a whole season.
Okay, fair.
Right, mm-hmm. That's been Billy the whole season. They've been like, boom, he gets possessed immediately. He's the guy they're gonna have confrontations with. You never feared for the kids in the face of Steve. You're just like, oh, he's kind of a douche.
Yeah.
You know?
Correct.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand what you're saying.
But go ahead.
No.
You're good?
Yeah.
I heard an inhale. I thought you were going to go.
I'm just thinking ahead of what I'm going to say next.
But there's a shot of this season for me is Elle standing outside. As Elle approaches the building and the car's there with the lights on and the red swirling, and they have that scene all lit, washed out in red. Looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I can find an image of it to use for the episode, but it looks so cool. And think about, like, Elle's pretty fascinating. You know, we take for granted, I think, her courage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that she's walking through this thing completely alone, hoping that she doesn't have to do something terrible or face something terrible, and hopefully she can escape. She thinks she can, but we see that interaction before all this where Billy grabs her and that sort of falling backwards. And this, I think that visually is trying to tell us that she's lost control a little bit here, and maybe she's not as safe as we think. And then it continues.
And we're definitely going to see that.
Absolutely.
As this goes on, which is because she thinks she's back.
That's awesome, by the way.
And this is like the turnaround where this whole time Eleven has had the power to be able to go and look at these things and walk through people's minds. And what we're seeing now is almost like this ability for like Billy to reverse it on her.
Yeah.
But not in a way where he's just like, oh, I'm where you are. In a way where he's like, I'm here and everyone else is gone. It's like a totally different plane. Yep. And it's frightening.
Yeah.
It's a really, really cool scene.
Especially that monster voice. You want to hear it? You know you want to hear the monster
voice.
Yeah,
I like it.
Before I let this play, outstanding acting from her, the fear.
Mm-hmm. She's terrified.
It's nice to see, again, the way she trounces the monster in the beginning almost made me go, uh-oh, we're going to that place where I fear Elle is going, which is she's too powerful.
Too powerful, right? Yep, and then they bring it right back down. I love that about the show.
Absolutely.
Because now I see you.
7 days.
Now we can all see you.
They really up the music game too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
They're also sweaty.
He likes it cold.
These people are fucking toast. Remember when you could go outside and hang out with people?
No.
Me neither.
You let us in.
Anyway, this goes on and on. It's a very good scene.
Great scene. Horror music. This is also a very horror movie. As I said, like the stuff with Eleven and everybody has been very much like a horror movie, and this scene is a great fucking example of it too.
Yep. It's awesome.
It's scary.
For sure.
And Billy's scary for someone who's very pretty and has lovely hair. He's pretty frightening.
For sure. Yeah. Yep. Totally. And we see this march, this inexorable pull to the steelworks, mm-hmm. and these, and I'm like, okay, they're gathering up the army. What's going to happen? Poor Elle's being tortured. She's terrified when she finally comes back. And we just see them falling down at the feet of this monster and being absorbed. Their viscous matter left behind. Ugh. Is just being absorbed into this thing.
Oh, it's so creepy when they do, it's when they die. Oh, it's amazing. It's like a horror movie.
This is really terrifying, and I like this.
And we see kids in line.
Right. Now, I mean, this is not what I would have expected. I would have expected to, what I said in the beginning is, oh, cool, people that look like us, and what does that mean? But they're essentially just being possessed for the sole purpose of the part they play literally in that monster, right? Mm-hmm. So it does alleviate our characters of having to face down people they know and love that have been turned into monsters.
With the exception of Billy, because it seems that Billy is different.
He's the mouthpiece or something. Yes. He seems to be the guy who reins him in.
Billy seems to kind of be, like the voice of the Mind Flayer, essentially. Like, he still is Flayed, but maybe like he was the first.
Was the first
maybe
one?
Maybe next. Mrs. Driscoll, was she already? We don't know.
Not sure.
We don't know. Maybe Billy was the first, or maybe it was just some for whatever reason. He seems to be different than the rest of them.
Yep. Yep. I'm sure it has a lot to do with, and this is something I like to think, but this is something that I think is probably because of his damaged nature, because of his personality, because of his poor moral actions, mm-hmm. that maybe he's more susceptible to being infected by this monster.
And I think that that's
more
fair.
More corruptible, right?
And that stuff I like and that I'm fine with. And I like that idea that maybe that's why Billy is like the mouthpiece, is because he already, his mind was already
compromised.
Dark,
yeah,
you know?
Of course, absolutely.
I feel bad, I don't feel bad about fucking Billy, but I feel bad I talk a lot of shit about Billy, because, I'm sure, the show has done well enough where, even though I'm really annoyed that they did all this shit, I'm like, oh, I fucking hope Billy's okay, a little bit in my heart, a little bit. I'm not cold.
No, of course.
I'm cold, but I'm not that cold.
Yeah, totally.
It's just, but so I guess I want to say that. And I think the actor who plays Billy, I think Dacre Montgomery is a really good actor.
I think it's important that we don't just completely write somebody entirely out of society, especially when they're super young, for just being a complete asshole to a bunch of people around them. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
He hasn't murdered anybody. He's not a fucking...
Kind of.
Well, I mean, once he got possessed. Obviously, once he was in the employ of the demon. But a young dude is going to do dumb shit and say dumb shit and probably have dumb beliefs, especially if they come from a fucking broken place.
Right.
And I'm not saying that makes him innocent. I'm just saying that makes him not beyond reproach. And I think to your point, the show can't convince you that in one episode. They should have done it throughout. You know what I'm saying?
And you can do that.
And yes, he was a dick to Lucas, and yes, but he was a dick to everybody. Everybody he was an asshole to.
Right.
He beat the shit out of Steve. He was mean to everybody. He's not just mean to one group of persons.
No,
he's mean to everyone.
But I think the show definitely, and I know the show tried to say it wasn't true, but I know, the show definitely portrayed him that way.
I know, and it was dumb.
And they
whatever.
Shouldn't have done that.
I know, it was stupid.
But it is what it is. And it's hard for them to come back from that, because for some reason in society, it's harder for you to come back. You could straight up fucking murder fools and whatever, and you might have a great story arc of how you become a hero at the end, but if you make a racist comment, you're fucking done. Oh. We're never going to forgive you.
Okay, Twitter, this is OJ with my Bots picks this week.
But do you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. The way society is for whatever reason.
For now.
If Billy had killed a dog or something, fucking forget about it.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
I'm just saying, I think if he would have smacked Max around and then we saw
we've seen him be rough with her, though.
Just bear with me. Okay. If he would have exclusively just smacked Max around and then was kind of mean and menacing to anyone, that he would have been probably viewed more favorably. And I think he's just a bad dude. And I think that's the way it is. And,
yeah.
But he's also not like 35. You know, he's supposed to be young. He's supposed to be a fucking idiot.
Yes. Billy is a kid and he's human. And the problem the show had is that they didn't humanize him soon enough.
Right. And I think
there's been a season making him a piece of shit, giving us one scene where you're like, oh, okay. Like, obviously his dad is like a dick to him and he's like, whatever.
It's the Lucas scene that's the most troubling, I think. I think that's the problem with making Billy sympathetic.
Yes.
And I think, and here's my opinion, I think if it was any boy, he was going to be a dick.
100%.
Because he's fucking Billy and he's a dick.
100%. Right? But it just the way it was filmed.
Exactly. The implication.
The implication.
Made him unredeemable, which is too bad because they kind of fucked themselves out of what's going to be ultimately a tragic ending.
And I think they could have made Billy more redeemable if they had started slowly and sooner trying to do so. Does that make sense?
At least somebody that you go, okay, there's a flaw, a deeply flawed and bad individual who maybe be able to do the right thing with a sacrifice at the end type of thing.
Because the most tragic thing that's going to happen in this scenario is the effect it would have on Max, who despite the fact that she knows he's a piece of shit, it's also still her brother.
Right, because at the end of the day, he's probably kept her safe a few times.
Yes, because we are very well aware of the fact that Billy's dad is an asshole.
Correct.
We've known that from the first season.
Yeah.
That Billy was on.
It'd be nice to see Billy stepping in front of her and catching a beating. It would be cool to see little things like this if you want it, like you said, humanize them throughout the course of the season.
And they wanted to because they gave us that one scene, that one scene. Yep. But that's all they gave us.
Yep.
And him being protective of Max in the manner where he's like basically being like, even if it's like misconstrued because they just didn't handle it well.
I'm going to watch that scene again before we pot again.
Like looking like he's like racist.
Yeah, I want to watch it again.
Like, that is not like a way where you're like, oh, he's protecting Max, like he cares about her. It doesn't feel that way.
Correct.
And
because he's right.
I want to watch the scene again too with his dad where his dad gets like rough with him and stuff. And like,
yeah, what the fuck is that actor again? Who was the actor that beat him up? Wasn't he somebody?
His dad?
Yeah, he wasn't. I don't remember. No. I want to see that scene again too. But I think
there's just so much surrounding Billy at this point, and so much of the season is now like coming to a head with like Billy and like Billy's life. And I just wish they had handled Billy a little different.
Yeah, I'm going to watch the episode. I'm going to watch that scene and then listen to, we discussed that at length.
I know.
And I want to watch that scene and listen to it again. But I am curious, and I'm curious as to if they could have done something to add a little bit of nuance to him. You know,
they just made him so one dimensional and didn't give us enough. And now we're at the point where they're like, we want you to care about Billy. And it's very hard to do that. And
I'm
human. I still care to a degree.
I think they want you to be a bit conflicted. I don't think they want you to be like, oh, I care. Let me hold him to my bosom. I think they want you to just be a little conflicted. It's like when somebody in Game of Thrones dies, you're like, fuck, they're evil, but that sucks that they're dead because of whatever. You know, like, they want you to be conflicted about it, right? And I know I'm guessing he dies, but I feel like they want you to be conflicted and not just be like, good riddance, who cares?
Yeah, and it's just hard.
Good riddance, who cares? Like, that's such a, what a crazy thing to think. Like, a kid who... It's weird. I'm ahead of my house because I'm ahead of myself because I haven't seen it yet. But I am gonna do a little bit of homework before we come back next week.
Yeah, and I'm also not saying that Billy's gonna die. Like, that's not what
I'm
saying.
I know you're not. I know you're not.
But I'm just trying to explain how I felt watching this show.
Yeah, you're doing a good job.
And it's so funny because like, and I'll save like more thoughts on this for when this is over, but I actually have enjoyed the season a lot more the second time around than I did the first time around. The first time around I was like, okay, blah blah, same old story, like whatever, and I've enjoyed it actually so much more like watching a second time.
Yeah, I had heard that there were some thoughts about there out, and let me tell you, it's very, very different watching a TV show after the buzz has passed and having no spoilers and not seeing any of the discussions around how one character may or may not behave, or how one might be chauvinistic and one not, and what one article says and what one guy tweets. There's something very pure about the way I'm watching this and enjoying it right now in a vacuum, or should I say outside of the chaos that is like social media and articles.
Right.
It's really handy.
Discussing that with you as opposed to when I originally watched it and talking to people who were watching it when it originally aired and like all the fucking articles and all the hate and all the bullshit. Like it really like skews how you view things.
It does. And whether we like to believe it or not, it definitely does.
And it's like, and there's some stuff where like I feel exactly the same as I did about like the first time around, the second time around. Like especially the positive stuff, like, you know, like love Steve and Robin, love Alexi, things like that. But some of the stuff, and I'm still hard on a lot of the same stuff, but just in general, I feel like I've enjoyed it so much more than like watching it this time around.
I'm glad. It's been an enjoyable season for me for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
It's funny, and I think that's, I think this is serving us, not to totally derail the show, but this is serving me in Westworld. I'm off Twitter.
Yep.
I don't read about it at all. Mm-hmm. I have no fucking clue. And it's nice to just be removed from that and to have no filter. I don't have the temptation to go on Reddit of all places. That really fucked me up on season one. Fucked up the whole podcast, to be frank. But but we bounce back in season two, if I can suck our dicks for a minute. But it definitely is good to not be corrupted by the outside influence of people. And I think that's just the way we are as people. I think we're going to get, because once, you know how we're saying you can't unring the bell, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You can't unring the bell of a thought that enters your head that comes from somebody else that's not yours.
Yeah.
It goes into your head and it's stuck there. You can't purge it, and then your thoughts are going to be wrapped up in it.
Again, it's the Westworld season one struggle where I went and read a bunch of Reddit articles and I talked about it, and I went into work and I talked to people at work about it, and people at work were like, now I can't see the show any other way because we've talked, like, it's like a rabbit hole. And I think there's a lot of that with the season of Stranger Things because there were a lot of very opinionated people.
Mm-hmm.
About a lot of things, and
including us, we podcast.
Yeah, I know. But we weren't podcasting when it first aired.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, it's nice to come in without, it's tabula rasa, right? Tabula rasa.
That's also an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's in
but
the
that's
top
the
25.
That's the move. You want to go in sort of blank, and
blank.
There's something to be said, and I know Josh does this, but there's something to be said about avoiding previews, avoiding like big news on a Star Wars thing or whatever. There's something to be said about that.
I love previews.
Yeah, I hear you. All right. We thank you guys very much for tuning in to another episode of the Hawkins Reports. We will catch you guys in about a week's time with the 7th episode. Very exciting. Let's see. What's the 7th one called? Let me pull it up here. The 7th one is called The Bite. Ooh, The Biters. Remember the governor? The Biters.
Dude, someone was just talking about True Blood the other day.
No, The Biters is the
governor.
Oh,
The Biters is Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Ugh, sorry. The Biters was a shitty vampire show. Creature show.
You
as
fucked
opposed
it up,
to.
Though. You fucked it up.
I apparently have True Blood on my mind.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Thank you guys very much. We'll catch you on the flip side. Thank you very much for tuning in to another edition of the Hawkins Report, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. Don't forget to visit us on the web at LiveryStreetGeek.net. That's LiveryStreetGeek.net.